And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM. This is our weekly program covering the arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner, New Perspectives Photography, alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City. We're your hosts for Art on the Air. By the way, our underwriters for this year are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and our landlord, Walt Breitinger. And if you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this great historical building, call Walt at 219-462-5821. That's 219-462-5821. We'd like to thank you for your generous support. We always like to thank Greg Kovach for his generous support.
We too, completely.
He's the station manager, and he's been showing Esther the ropes on the mixing console as we do our show today.
You can hear my heart beating very fast right now.
But she does a great job. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest on our show or sending us information about your arts or arts-related events, or appear as a guest, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. By the way, we do have rebroadcast this program at 5 o'clock on Mondays, and it takes about a week, but we do have an archive of the show, and that's at Breck, that's BREC.com/AOTA. That's Breck.com/AOTA. And then you can listen to our past episodes and everything if you missed it and everything and catch up with us. So, by the way, we'd like to say that, you know, WVLP, of course, we are supported by the community and we need your support. We had an actual campaign toward the end of the year, but we have underwriter levels at the $300 level all the way up to $2,400. Boy, that'd be great to get a $2,400 check.
It'd be lovely.
Yeah, but we can expand our thing. But if you're interested in supporting our station in whatever level, from an individual contribution all the way up to an immediate level, go to WVLP.org/support. That's WVLP.org/support. And remember, we don't want you to just be a listener. We want you to become a supporter of the station. And like I said, every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. So we're going to move on to our arts calendar right now, and I'll start with Porter County. Porter County, of course, we'll start with the Brower Museum, January 8th through March 31st. They have Icons on Ammo Boxes. That's art by Sofia Altanova and Oscalando Kalaminko. Also, they have Line, Force, and Burn Rubber by Sarah Crump and Olivia Petrides, and the art of Lynn Olson. Ellen Firm Gallery on US 12 in Beverly Shores. They're going to have Caricatures by Irene Brown. In fact, I went to that opening for Irene. She's known as a docent at the Depot.
Yes, I know.
Have you seen her things?
No, I have not gone to the show yet, but I do intend to.
They are great. They're, you know, just simple lines, but they are really wonderful. Kind of a whole style unto herself. The Village Gallery at Pines. They have an exhibit going on. They're just finishing up with Lori Carpenter, and they'll be coming in with a new one. In fact, I just talked with them. I'll be doing an exhibit sometime in July.
You are so fabulous.
Well, you really... I like doing exhibits, so I said, I guess you call me an exhibitionist now. Chesterton Arts Center. The front gallery is Frontline Foundations Unbroken and Alive exhibition. These are worked by their clients in recovery from addiction, and plus they had a musical group there, Salt Exchange. So they are in the front gallery that's playing for this entire month. And then Quilting Gone Wrong, and this is not your grandmother's quilt is how I can describe it. It's in the back gallery, features students of Leslie Caffelli. She taught a wonderful fiber class, and so it's like small quilts, wild colors, you know, fun embellishments. Again, the Chesterton Arts Center is on 4th Street in Chesterton, and that's going through February. Memorial Opera House has extended their production of Shrek the Musical. So they added a weekend. So now it's going until March 10th. And they're going performances on Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. You can find information on their Facebook page and or on the web. Plus, adult tickets are 21. Senior students and militaries are 18. And, of course, they do have group rates. So that's about all we have right now for Porter County. What do you have for LaPorte County?
It's, again, February light. March is going to pick up in Michigan City. But we have Lubeznik Center for the Arts. They have the exhibit Nature Versus Everything through June 8th, and it features 9 contemporary artists with work that is environmentally minded. The exhibit explores the perilous battle between humanity and the natural world. In the NIPSCO Art Education Studio is Melissa Washburn's Cabinet of Curiosities. Discover all the wonder and beauty this exhibition offers. Southern Shore Art Association has A Moment in Time. And they will have their closing reception on February 22nd.
That's been canceled. I sent that to you. Oh. Yeah, they decided that, I was at the board meeting this week, they decided not to have a closing reception only 1 week from an opening reception. So,
well, that makes sense.
And I do have six pieces
but
in that
still,
show.
Go and see the exhibit.
Yes, I have six pieces in it.
And that gallery is located at 724 Franklin Street, and they are open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 to 5. Find them on the web, southernshoreartassociation.com, or visit their Facebook page, Southern Shore Art Association. The Thaddeus C. Gallery is located in La Porte, and their hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Their telephone number, 219-326-8626. Find them at thaddeusc.com. Blink Contemporary Art is at 1709 Franklin Street, but actually I'll have to amend that. They're out of town until March as well. The Nest, located at 803 Franklin Street, we are getting ready to put up an exhibit of women's art for a few days only to support International Women's Day on March 8th. After that, Sunday, February 17th from 1 to 3 p.m. It's the monthly meeting of the Mindful Fiber Artists, and it's a gathering encompassing all things fiber. Please bring a project to work on. Everybody's welcome. February 18th is the Singing Sands Toastmaster meeting, and they meet every first and third Monday of the month at 6:15 in the gallery. And like I said, February 18th is their next meeting. February 23rd, we had a cancellation of the Every Kind of Talent show with Captain Ambivalent. We're picking it up March 23rd. And I think there we go. That's it for
La Porte County.
That is it for La Porte County.
Well, we're going to move on
March
to Lake
is
County.
Better.
Well, yeah, March will be the happening month. South Shore Arts, the exhibit curated by the one and only John Kane, will be Haunts, and that's going to be running through April 21st. They do have an artist reception for all the exhibits in the gallery on March 3rd, and it's running through April 21st. The will feature the works of guerrilla photographers who like to go into places like in Gary and other cities, capturing the haunting beauty of architectural ruins on the verge of being repurposed as gardens and things. The Atrium Gallery, James Wilkowiak, continues through March 24th, and he will also have the reception on March 3rd. He's a Chicago-born artist whose current paintings and installations have show the role of color and familiar form. Toll Theater has the artwork now of Laurie Shimmer Carpenter, who just left the Village Gallery with her oil painting, and it'll feature her work through March 17th. Studio 659, their current jury show artistic license, runs through March 4th. Salon-style show with many things. They already had the reception. That's located on the main street there, 119th Street in Whiting. You can go there and see the wonderful show there. Miller Beach and Creative Art District, well, they picked up the exhibit and kind of split it up, the Indie Windy a Love Story that was just at the Southern Shore, and you can see that at their wonderful gallery there. They also have it at the Social Kitchen at 411 East 5th Street and at the Gary Public Library at 222 South 5th Street, and so you can see it, and they've kind of split the exhibit up because it was too large for their own space there. You can contact Meg Roman by email, millerbeacharts.org, or give them a call. They have a website and Facebook page. Evening of Entertainment, February 16th, The Reflections in Our Culture. This is also sponsored by the Miller Beach Arts District. It'll feature Dr. Mark McFall and dancers from the South Shore Dance Alliance under Larry Brewer's tutelage. It's called Shades of Crimson and Cream. This is this book from Dr. Hall. Diverse people in history of Indiana University from 1820 to 2020. And so he's looking back, kind of a retrospective and future perspective of things going on with that. They'll have a poetry interpretation. About 6:30, they'll do a dance performance. He'll discuss his book, more dance, and everything. There's a suggested contribution of $5 to $10. Again, you can find out information at the about the Arts District. Nostalgic Structures and Scenics, the works of photographic artist me. It's been extended through March 8th in the main lobby of the 8585 Broadway Professional Building. That's the former Chase Bank.
We're going to have to do a tour bus and just take a tour bus and visit all your exhibits.
Well, you know, that's what we do. But on the side note there, Lori Salter, who's the building manager, has got a call out for artists. And so she would like to bring in other new artists. She's had this as an ongoing thing. So if you want to contact Lori Salter from that building to exhibit your art, either a solo or maybe a duo exhibit, it's Lori Salter, but it's Lori, L-O-R-I, at Napleton.com. That's Napleton, N-A-P-E-L-T-O-N.com. Lori at Napleton.com. And you can contact her. I'll also give you her phone number if you're interested. 219-738-5258. That's 738-5258. Lori Salter. And she's the building manager, but she also coordinates the art district. And what they do is they actually print up a brochure for the artists there, and everything is very nice and a very beautiful space and exposure to the professionals in that building. Finally, the Area Art Association will present Artistic Narrative. That's going to be at the Indiana Visitor Center at I-8094 and Kennedy Avenue in Hammond. And they're going to have about 60 pieces from 15 artists. I have 4 pieces in that exhibit, by the way. That's
it's a beautiful place to show there.
It's a beautiful place, yes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they'll be doing that, and they will be having an opening. I'll announce that next week, but I didn't put it on my sheet here, so I kind of failed at that attempt. So that's what we got going on in Lake County and all around the region. Again, if you want to send us your information, that's artontheair, WVLP, at gmail.com. Be glad to get your event on the air. We do the calendar for about the first 10 minutes of the show, and then we have wonderful guests on today, so on everything, like we do right now. Now, this young man, I knew when he first started out as, a newly minted baby journalist, when I was working at the Center for Visual Performing Arts and Theater at the Center a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away in the 90s, in his formative stages, Philip Potemkin, he's the director of marketing, and also he's a journalist, and we welcome him to the show, and he's going to talk about what's going on at the center, but also in his own life. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you to your listeners as well.
Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit about Philip and his roots in Northwest Indiana and growing up and where you went to college and everything like that, your journey.
Well, down the street from here, of course, one of my favorite home away from home is Valparaiso University, and I was so pleased to hear that you said that. The Brower Art Museum is one of the underwriters for your program because that's where I graduated from in 1992 from Valpa University. So our family farm is about 30 minutes south in Stark County, and then went to school at Valparaiso University. We didn't have the Center for Arts at the time. Instead, we had a much, much smaller building, Kroenke Hall, where the arts were housed. And we had most of the art collection in what was then Mollering Library on display. But as you know, art should really be in a very controlled environment, and it really wasn't conducive to have it in the library. But that's what the campus had at the time. So I was always appreciative of all the art that surrounded us. And then from there, got my first position with the newspaper in Valparaiso right here at the Vidette Messenger, which was the daily newspaper, and it covered pretty much all of Porter County, a little of the fringe of LaPorte County, and just a little of the fringe of Lake County, about 24,000 circulation. And then in 1995, what was then the Hammond Times swallowed up the local Valparaiso newspaper and purchased it along with the desk and the furniture and the computers and myself and a few of the other reporters that they kept on staff. And I stayed with the Times as it expanded as the Northwest Indiana Times and also into Illinois for 22 years, all the way until November 2015, when I left, and that's when I had the new position, the Director of Marketing at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts and Theater at the Center. And journalism career was not quite finished because the Post Tribune and Chicago Tribune editors came knocking on my door to say, you do all these columns about entertainment and arts and your food and recipe column, why not continue that? Would you want to contribute those in our editions? And the powers that be at the Performing Arts Center said, yeah, that would be great if you want to do it. So I continue that journalistic journey today, and my columns appear in the Post Tribune in print as well as at chicagotribune.com.
That's fantastic. Where did you go to school, high school?
High school was North Judson Sam Pier High School. Oh. So again, out in the farm hinterlands there in Stark County, about 30 minutes south of here.
So way out in the farmland. So you came to the center and everything. And, of course, we have some history. I remember when you were starting out and everything. When I was working at the center from 92 to 98, we shared some of the people that were there. You were covering. The one I love is Jonathan Fridge.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't remember Jonathan Fridge, he was Barnabas Collins on Dark Shadows. Mm-hmm. And he came to do dramatic reading, and it was a He was very, very interesting man. Very kind of quiet and sedate, unlike his
Yes. And I think he was doing, wasn't he doing a salute to Edgar Allan Poe? Wasn't
yes,
that?
That was he did. He was there twice, actually.
Oh wow, okay.
And I remember he brought his things in, his background music and everything on reel to reel.
Oh, really?
Which even in the 90s was still, you know, not done much and everything. So it was sort of an interesting thing. I remember you interviewed him.
Yeah.
Though.
And you know, and he was one of those. He was one of the actors, and he passed away about 6 or 7 years ago. He was one of the ones that would quite often, you know, in interviews and things, I remember, he didn't really want to be associated with Dark Shadows and his reluctant vampire alter ego, which was Barnabas Collins. And he'd talk about it, but again, he had done so much other stage work, which, of course, is certainly a reason to applaud. But you can't help that. In a pop culture sense, this is what he was known for. And I've stumbled across a few celebrities over the years that are the same way. They'll say, oh, but the publicist will say, don't ask the so-and-so person about this. They will only want to talk about their current project, which is great, but then it makes you as a journalist seem silly because when you're writing the piece and you don't make any mention of what another claim to fame might be, it leaves the reader scratching their head. But afterwards, I couldn't resist. I remember bringing a couple pieces of memorabilia for him to sign, and he was in the lobby there, and he signed our Dark Shadows board game from the 1970s. It wasn't mine because I was born in 1970, but my older siblings had it, and they said, you've got to get this autographed. And he was very kind, and he autographed it. But I remember even, and we should say that the Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster at 1040 Ridge Road is celebrating its 30th anniversary because it opened in 1989, which I can't believe it's been 30 years. One of the very first claim to fame headliners they had there, and it might be even right before you, but they had Harpo Marx's son come
right
and do a concert.
I was there.
You were there for that too,
yeah,
as well. Which
I wasn't working full time at that point. They brought me in kind of to do a technical work on the
okay
shows, but yeah, I remember working on that show.
And I don't know that I don't remember if I saw that one or not, but did he play the harp or what was his show? One was it a
yeah,
man one
well,
man
he,
show?
He played the piano, and he had this other his co-performer, a young lady, played the harp, and occasionally, and she actually would, at one point in the show, would dress up like Harpo and play the
harp. Oh, wow, okay.
But yeah, it was sort of that, it was, so they kind of spun off the fame of that whole thing. So, but
interesting.
Yeah, that was just, and I also remember when we had the Chieftains there.
Yeah, the Chieftains.
And that was just before I got hired on there full time because I was working for the school town of Highland as the auditorium and theater director. But anyway, I remember that they always want, as you know, for hospitality, they always want their certain things to drink.
Yeah.
They want all these expensive ales and things beforehand and everything.
That's interesting. In their contract writer, right?
Right.
Yeah.
In their tech writer. It's amazing.
Yes.
Sometimes the things in tech writer.
Yeah.
Probably just off the subject. I remember when we had Ray Price there, and this is one story I love. And we got their tech writer, and they sent me the audio requirements. And it was like for a stadium. So I contact their guy, and I said, no, you know, we don't need this. I said, this is a small venue, 400 seats. It's only like 7 rows deep. Da, da, da. Oh no, we have to have that. And I went, anyway, so we ended up doing it, and it cost us a small fortune. Anyway, when he came in there, he said, what the? You swear at Ray Price.
Yeah.
And so I actually was kind of nice about it. I said, well, your guy here, he was present, told me you absolutely had to have this. And so I don't know if I got him in trouble. But
did he readjust and say, you know,
no, it was already set up. I mean,
I thought maybe he'd readjust the fee and say, this was crazy. I'm sorry you had to pay for this.
No.
Let me shave some off the performance
didn't.
Fee. Darn it. You know, it was worth the
try. They didn't do that.
But you know, to bring up a good point here, the Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster, it has been, as I like to call it, an oasis for arts and culture for, again, 30 years. And for many, many years, it was always in the shadow of the Holiday Star Plaza, as it was called, or the Radisson Star Plaza there in Merrillville. And with good reason, because it was a much bigger space. And I still lament its raising that it's not there as of now, after all those years since it opened in 79. But because it was so much larger with 3,000 seats and it attracted even larger headliners, I think that the Munster venue space always just kind of got forgotten, although it always did a good brisk business, but not enough for people out here. That's why I was so pleased to be able to come out. And again, I love our Center for the Arts at Valpo University, and I write plenty about it. But it's nice to let the folks on this side of the county line of Porter County know that it's just a stone's throw away. Again, within
it was
36 minutes to get here, and it's free parking. It's a beautiful space. And then all these headliners that have been over the years, and you mentioned they had all these special concerts, and we've continued that tradition. But back then, you had Mark Russell, the political
several times,
the Dixie Chicks before they were in their realm,
even before Maine was part of the group.
Yeah, that you had so many, and then of course we mentioned Maxine Andrews brought her concert show there as well, and you just had so many greats there over the years, well before even it kind of became more of a main stage.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP, and we have our guest, Phil Potempa. Again, we are supported by Underwriting, and again, if you want to support us at wvlp.org/support, and we'd like to thank you for that as we continue our interview with Phil. So,
And so the lobby usually has an art exhibit as well, isn't that
yes.
true?
Yes, through the gracious contributions of South Shore Arts. They use that space in the atrium lobby to do one exhibit, and then once you make your way through the gift shop into the main gallery there, they have a much more larger, expansive exhibit. And so you get really an extra bonus every time you walk into that building. You walk past that fountain out front, and inside you've got the art gallery opportunities, Northwest Indiana Symphony. I know their home was always a star plaza to perform, but their headquarters home is right there, also in that same building. And so really, it's an opportunity for all of the artistic mediums.
I know when I was there, we actually made a deal with the symphony to do some of their smaller chamber concerts on the stage and everything. So they, you know, just to get them on the space, because we talked about it, said, well, you know, here you're in the building. Why don't we get you on the stage? I mean, just do like a 4-piece or 6-piece thing. And so that, back in the dark ages when I was there, that's what we did.
Well, and the one thing that's true, despite mentioning, again, the Star Plaza, the Center for the Arts here, at Valparaiso University, where also I'm still a member of the faculty, and I teach at my alma mater there as well as at Purdue Northwest. The one thing that Theater at the Center, which again is housed inside the Center for Visual and Performing Arts, has continued to make the claim to fame, and we're proud to say that the theme we use is Northwest Indiana. It's your chance to experience Broadway in Northwest Indiana, because there isn't anything else. And I know the Star Plaza, and Charlie Blum is a good friend who's the booking agent over there for so many years. They would attempt to bring in some touring shows like Jesus Christ Superstar. Cats, I know, also, you know, had been on their stage at the Star Plaza. And then, of course, the M&M Productions, the Ross Music Theater, they would book for their summers and do productions there. But as far as professional equity theater, that all started with you at the Theater at the Center. And that's what we've continued. And we're excited to talk about the fantastic main stage season we have in 2019.
All right. Well, we'll get to that in just a minute because it's really grown considerably, like going to a year-round production. Like we were concentrated on a summer stock when I was there and then scattering a few things throughout the year.
I know, so. And the quality is so excellent.
Yeah. Well, it took a while I know this historically from being there, the transition from 92 to when I left in 98, we were now starting in 98, beginning to like, oh yeah, this is a real deal to the Chicago talent. And so we moved on, and of course I had to leave because the school system in Munster made me an offer I couldn't refuse. So
you were a neighbor still right down the street
right.
there for a while. So
but the money was much better, because as you know, sometimes working for a non-for-profit,
which it's we vow were of poverty.
Yes, it was like the vow of poverty.
But in journalism, it's the same thing. So I'm used to this.
Under John Mybeck, he liked to say, okay, we're going to give you $100 a year raise. It's like, oh really? You think that's cost?
Get your calculator out, right?
Right. So well, let's talk a little bit about what you have coming up right now. At Theater at the Center. And Theater Center, by the way, is located, if you don't know, on 1040 Ridge Road. And they have a beautiful thing. In fact, I remember my own phone number there. I don't know who has it, the 3260 suffix now. But
3260, I think that's in the general manager's office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and artistic director, so same circle.
Yeah, my wife's cell phone still keeps that suffix on there. So, but I that was the day of cell phones. And when you start, we actually had to pay for our cell phone. I said, I'm doing a lot of business this way. And I used to forward my calls when I was out of the office from my office just to be able to conduct business.
Right.
So, but anyway, we have some wonderful things coming up. In fact, you just tonight you open your...
Yes, last night for Valentine's Day was the very first preview.
Okay.
So this will be the big first Friday night performance. And I'm glad you mentioned again, 1040 Ridge Road is where Theater at the Center is based. And for everybody here on the Porter County side of things, Ridge Road, your equivalent is just Highway 6. Stay on Highway 6, and you can go all the way down or hop on the expressway. And as we say, it's exit number one. It's that first one over the state line in Munster, Indiana. This brand new season, again, it's got a lot of firsts in there. So we're launching things, as we just kind of hinted to yesterday afternoon, and then tonight's performance, Million Dollar Quartet. So that's one everybody's been waiting to come here to Northwest Indiana. Played on Broadway, made such a smashing success. The Goodman Theater, legendary, of course, as a stage space downtown Chicago. They're the ones that launched the story first, and then they took it to the Apollo Theater, and now it's been as a standing show in Las Vegas. But it's all about an actual event that actually really happened December the 4th, 1956. The legendary Sun Records and Sam Phillips, he was such a genius and such a, again, somebody who was well ahead of his time, managed to gather these headliners all in the same room. Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis on those crazy piano keys, and Carl Perkins for a jam session. And he very cleverly got his sound person to hit record. And it's captured. It really happened. And there's black and white photos. And I made sure when crafting the playbill, I put that original photo that was captured in there, as well as the story of how it came to be. And this musical review tells that story of that legendary night with his jam session. Really did happen in 1956. So you get all the favorite songs like Great Balls of Fire and Walk the Line and Blue Suede Shoes. There's dozens of hits that you hear, and it goes very quickly, just under 2 hours, one intermission. And again, it rocks the house, and it takes you to that space. You kind of feel like that fourth wall is broken, and you kind of get to listen in on this legendary recording session. And we are doing something we've never done before. It's such a popular show. It's been already extended. So it's a seven-week run. Open now and goes all the way until March the 31st.
Oh, excellent.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's amazing to watch the rise of what I call the jukebox musicals, starting with Mamma Mia and everything like that. Of course, being an old-school musical theater director myself who likes the narrative form, but it really has become popular because the audience is already built in. They love the music. And so because they love the music, like you take Jersey Boys or something like that, there's an easy plug-in, and you just cobble it together with a little story.
But then you have a whole new generation who experiences it in a new way, and it's fabulous.
Oh, yeah, and these are the soundtracks that just continue to sell and sell. This is the kind of performance, again, that I told people that when they come, they're dazzled, and it makes them want to say, you know what, we should bring fill-in-the-blank and have them come back with us. And you could see it again and still enjoy it because it's a lot like being at a concert, really, in this shape and form. And it's unbelievable what Ann Davis has done. That set is just marvelous. It really makes you feel like you're in Sun Records. It's a little bit seedy. It's got a little bit of a seasoned feel to it. And in there, that's where all the magic is happening. And Jerry Lee Lewis pounding on that piano and being crazy. Because again, 1956, all of these were first starting to launch their careers. And there's a lot, you know, Larry and I, we were chatting a little bit here as well with our other host here before we went on the air. And we love all the behind the scenes things. And what happens with this is you hear Elvis's career at the time. You know, he's just been plucked from RCA, and he's out in Hollywood making these films that are kind of lackluster, and they're really starting to capitalize on him. And there's a few little nods to people like the Colonel, which of course was his legendary manager that squeezed every dime out of Elvis that he could, including some of these film scripts that weren't all that great that made the King actually have to just sort of bend to the whim and crank these out. But all that unfolds in this great musical.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Tell us about some of the actors you have for it a little bit, you know, their backgrounds and who
certainly
they are.
So when we were casting this, we were really looking for folks that could kind of capture, again, larger-than-life figures. So we want them to really bring the spirit of the music there, but we don't want it to be a cookie cutter because there is already an Elvis and a Johnny Cash, and so you don't want to try to reinvent them, but you want them to look, and I think that, you know, they've done a pretty good job. When you look at the photos and things, I think in the publicity photos, they kind of capture the man in black, and they're all, again, and we talked about this before we went on the air, they're all from Chicagoland. So we have a couple of Zachs here. Zach Sorrow is the one that's playing the role of Elvis Presley, and a number of these have also either been understudied or they have actually appeared in Million Dollar Quartet in its other forms around Chicagoland. So we really do cast not just Northwest Indiana, but we also cast a lot of favorites from the Chicagoland. So you mentioned that really Theater at the Center is a major player, and it is. So the Drury Lanes that are out there in Chicagoland, the Marriott Lincolnshire, we're right there with them, and we're casting these same entities. Michael Kurowski, who plays the Jerry Lee Lewis, I'm telling you, he must drink about three Red Bulls before he goes on stage because he is playing that piano with his feet and with his hands and backwards and bending, and he's like Gumby on that piano, and very, very entertaining.
Very good. And so you got a great cast, and again, a Theater at the Center, 1040 Ridge Road, and you can get tickets for this wonderful thing, and I guess they're selling fairly fast.
Yes, they are. And again, you mentioned it's an intimate space, so again, I'm going to guess that there are a lot of folks here, Porter County, LaPorte County, who have maybe not made what I call the trek, but again, it's not that far. It's about 36 minutes away to the Theater at the Center, at the
and
Center for Visual Performing Arts.
It's so comfortable when you get there.
It is.
As
it's
well.
A, it's
welcoming.
A wonderful. It is. When you walk in, it's just a great environment, and it only holds 400 seats. And so tickets have been really selling well, although it's, and Larry can speak to this, it's not a theater in the round, but it's almost a theater in the three quarters because it's kind of a U-shaped
audience. It's actually, when I taught a class in theater, I said, it's not truly a thrust, but it's actually a modified thrust because you also still have a kind of a proscenium.
Yes.
So you can still do some proscenium things, though I wish they made more wing space. I'll have to tell you a story about that. the wing space, it was really designed more as a concert hall, but it's very intimate. You're no more than seven rows away from the stage at any point. So.
And And every seat is fantastic for this show. So even though it's selling well, and I'm looking at the box office totals, and I'm seeing a lot of these are 250, 300, 370. Again, it seats 410, but any seat you're at, it's comfortable. And what people love, they love that there's lots of leg room. Whoever designed that theater realized that there should be lots of leg room. So even if somebody is seated and you're making your way through the aisle, it's you can walk right through without them having to get up. So there is plenty of space. And again, I hope that more folks from Porter County are going to come out, because there is a wonderful lot of community theater. And I write about it in my columns every week. You have Memorial Opera House. You have Chicago Street Theater. We have the Toll Theater. Those are all fantastic. Those are not professional equity theater, and we don't expect them to be. These are professional actors who make their living doing this. And other than going all the way out east to, I would say, South Bend to maybe their civic center right downtown, or going to the south, Indianapolis, there isn't any other professional theater that I can think of in all of Indiana. So we're kind of it.
Yeah, we're it for Northwest Indiana. By the way, you're listening to Phil Potemka on Art on the Air, WVLP, and you can listen to us streaming at WVLP.org. And also, if you want to support us, it's WVLP/support. We're talking about Theater at the Center in Northwest Indiana, my old stomping grounds from 92 to 98 before
I love these stories.
We have more. We have so many more that are so fun, but that's great. From the theater. Well, the one story real quick I always tell is when we were doing Carousel on the stage, and there, of course, the opening thing is actually on a carousel, and I was working with a really talented scene designer, Leming Tang, but she wanted to make a 14-foot diameter carousel. And so I kept telling her, I said, Leming, this is only on for one scene, has to live then off stage. And she always said, oh, I know. So anyway, when she came for her site visit, I took a tape measure, put it off stage and pulled it out and says, I make 11 feet because it couldn't be that big. It just,
right.
Because there is no wing space there. And the other trick there that, and we were talking about before the show, is when I was there, everything is built in the shop underneath, comes out through a double door and has to beamed up. We used to do the turnaround in less than 24 hours.
Wow.
Which, I mean, there would still be touch-ups we have to do after it's up, but that was always scary to me because I thought, and I'll tell you a story about Annie after the show that I was scared to death about. But anyway.
Well, anybody who comes out, they'll be amazed at the space because you're right. It's got its traditional stage, and when he says there's not much wing space, what Larry's referring to, it's just backstage. You're not going to store a whole lot of stuff behind that curtain because basically it's wall. There's a walk space and a wall. There's just not a lot of room. But that big round part that kind of thrust out, as you call it, they call it the drum, that can be lowered all the way into the shop, and then they can bring things up. And I think I might have told Larry this story, but as a reporter, as he likes to say, a young cub reporter, I remember covering Lee Merriweather there as the headliner. She was the Hollywood star, A-list star they brought in for Barefoot in the Park. And we were at a Sunday afternoon performance, my parents and I, and that drum got stuck. And they weren't sure if they were going to do the second act. I remember we kept waiting and waiting, and you couldn't because there was a big hole there. But somehow they got it going again.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Were you there?
Yeah, I was there. I was there for almost every performance.
Might have gave you a couple of gray hairs, I'm sure, at that
point.
Yeah,
that did. But you know, you know what? You just work it out, and then you just kind of, you know, with anything with theater is you just move on.
Yeah, that's right.
You adapt and everything.
Take a breath.
And that was my last show at the center because, Lee was, in fact, I remember in the, I don't know if it was quite closing night, but I was leaving for the, and she was a Miss America, as most people might remember, I think 1955. And anyway, so she had like a little thing watching that at break time, and then kind of a departure thing for me. So
that's so nice. She's a class act.
She is a class act. And they have a lot of class acts that have been there over the years and continue to bring in.
Oh, yes, yes. We, again, now that the Star Plaza is not here, we really want to include a lot of special programming. So our main stage shows are, as I told you, Million Dollar Quartet. It kicks that off. The big spring musical is Dames at Sea. So that's going to kind of take you in with their Mother's Day. A lot of people like to come and do the Sunday champagne brunch with Chef Joe Trauma and then spend their Mother's Day. That goes May the 2nd until June the 2nd. So Dames at Sea is kind of that old-fashioned Broadway musical hoofer. They have done a comedy play for the summer months. That's July 11th to August the 11th, Over the Tavern, which was done there before. And it's kind of autobiographical. And Tom Dudzik's funny story of a 12-year-old who's just at odds with his nun teacher that he just is not getting along with. And when he tells her he thinks he might want to shop around for another religion, you can bet that does not bode well. So that's a very funny comedy play for the summer. And then direct from Broadway. This was with Harry Connick, I think, a few years ago. The Pajama Game, based on the old Doris Day movie. We're going to do that Broadway kind of chestnut, September the 12th through October the 13th. And then our biggie holiday show, which is sometimes the only show some people see. If they're not a big theater goer, they might say, I don't go to the theater, but I do always go see a holiday show. We have Irving Berlin's White Christmas, never done before on that stage, because it is such a huge, huge spectacle to do. It's got all those great songs that you love, since like Count Your Blessings and, of course, Sisters and Blue Skies and White Christmas, the title song. That's November the 14th. Take it right on through Thanksgiving and to December the 22nd. And then we sandwich in there all of these special events. And again, we have a few headliners. We have Ed Asner coming. We have comedy nights that happen. We have, you know, a salute to Mardi Gras with Creole Stomp, a Cajun band that's coming up. Pat Tomasulo, who's one of your favorite, probably WGN news and sports personalities on TV. He's a comedian, and he's bringing his act there.
He has his own thing on WGN, too, now.
Yeah, that's right. He's got that late night show. So we've got him coming. You know, you really want to go to www.theater, and that's with the R-E, theateratthecenter.com, to get the full schedule. Or you can always, of course, call 219-836-3255. That's the box office. We can mail you out one of these print brochures if you want. Just make sure that you can mark your calendar, put it on your refrigerator.
Talk to Jamie Marsh. Is she still there?
Jamie Marsh is going on more than two decades of being there, and she's still there running the box office, and she's the one that handed me this brochure that I'm using for my homework, and she was made sure I was armed and ready for your show.
Way to go, excellent. Jamie. And, of course, they have the Purdue Varsity Club. That's almost been a perennial thing. I know when I was there, we did it several times and everything, and under several different directors, so it was kind of an interesting, and that was because of the strong Purdue connection that
Mr. Powers,
oh my gosh, I mean, they've named buildings after him.
Yes, Mr. Powers has his own building over at the Purdue Northwest campus there that's in Hammond. But in the lobby, there's a huge bronze bust of again, our generous benefactor, the Powers family, that are the ones that constructed this again, the Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster, because they wanted there to be an outlet in the community for arts and for culture. And so he was certainly a visionary, and we lost him about 3 years ago at, I think, age 94, but his memory and legacy continues.
I remember.
And it's so much more than that, though, because you feel like it's a very full experience there. Not only is it like you feel like you've been to Chicago or some great big production right here in Indiana.
Without the parking price, right?
Without the parking, yes. And it just is an all-around good feeling.
No paying for parking. There's plenty of parking, easy access.
I remember when they installed the Powers bust, and we had to have engineers come in to make sure the floor would support it.
Oh, it's on a huge marble pedestal in the bronze. And you know what's so interesting about that? I've always thought, as even before I was employed there, is that Mr. Powers' bust, he has his eyeglasses on. He has bronze eyeglasses. You don't usually see, you know, a statue or a bust of somebody wearing eyeglasses, but Mr. Powers always had them on, and he still has them on in the afterlife.
Well, that's for sure. Philip Bachman was the one who designed the whole building, but actually the theater and everything like that. So, and they did a few things. Like I said, we'd like to have more wing space. They're going to do this legit theater, but he did a lot of things right with that space. It's very, very intimate and everything. And Esther was saying, the you get a total experience there. And then, of course, Joe Trama, I mean, he was back there for years and years, is a remarkable chef. So
yes, and again, you know that these folks with this long history, you mentioned Jamie, we mentioned Chef Joe Trama and his team at Trama Catering doing the champagne brunch and all the dinners. So you can make it a one-stop shop since the very get-go has been there. So they have this down to a science, and they know hospitality, and will treat every guest right. So we hope that folks are, again, going to, if you've never experienced this, or it's been a while, and I know years ago there was a group that came as a Christmas party. It's very popular to book that space as a Christmas party, and they worked in group tickets to come and see the show and eat first, and there's a lot of opportunities. So I'm hoping that people are putting on their thinking caps and maybe getting some light bulbs going over their head by hearing this great opportunity to be on your show.
Well, it's exciting with White Christmas because a lot of people will come there expecting the motion picture, and I know that the libretto for that is quite a bit different, and actually much more politically correct. You know the motion picture. My wife and I were watching that over the holiday and said, oh, they could never do that on stage. This referring to blackface.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And, you know, even when you mentioned Carousel, that's one that I had never ever seen that story done until I saw it at the Lyric, I think, a couple of years ago. You think Carousel, that is a very heavy story.
It's very heavy.
That is not just a light, fun, whimsical. No, it's got a very, very a dark storyline to it.
And you know that that's Rodgers and Hammerstein's favorite musical.
I really did not.
When I was researching my doctorate, and of course it was on musical theater, but they liked it because of that. That in South Pacific. Pacific's message.
Yeah.
You know, in this day and age. But yeah, they... It's amazing what Rodgers and Hammerstein, because they really developed what's called the narrative form of the musical. I don't want to get into that too much, but anyway. But I saw the PBS thing of White Christmas, and it's amazing. It still will give you the best elements of it and take out some of the other ones. When we did Finian's Rainbow, there was some controversy, could have been some controversy about that, because if you're familiar with the story, there's two stories going on, but there's a senator who's a very racist white senator. And anyway, in this story, he's right over the magic thing, and someone says, "I wish you were black," and he actually turns into black. We did it with blackface because what it does is he then experiences life that way. It's a very telling table, and then later he's turned back and he's of course transformed. Nowadays, when they do that story, they use two actors
because
But we were, even then in the 90s, we're like, is this okay to do that?
Yeah, and again, you go back into time, a different time, different mindset, and our awareness just wasn't always where it should be. You mentioned some of the other headliners, and I was tossing out a few of those. One of the things that we do there a lot for our special events programming is we do what we kind of are considering tributes. And Michael Ingersoll, who was part of the fantastic group that played at the Star Plaza, so under the street lamp, which they were all former members of the tours and the Chicago sit-down performance of Jersey Boys, he has his own umbrella now kind of producing company, and it's called the Artist Lounge Series Live. And we've been bringing these in. We had a fantastic salute to Ella Fitzgerald that we already had done last season, and it did so well. We brought a whole big lineup, including starting with a salute to Aretha Franklin, Queen of Soul. That's going to be in June by the wonderful Donica Lynn. She was in our production of Ghost Musical last year. And Lean on Me, a salute to the Brotherhood of Rock and Roll. That has Michael Ingersoll himself in it and Christopher Cale Jones, who folks would have saw in Miracle on 34th Street in December. Then it continues with, and this one I'm really excited about, Heidi Kettering is going to do a salute to Karen Carpenter. We've only just begun. There's all of these fantastic salutes. And if you want the real person in the flesh, the one and only Ed Asner at age 89, and he was just down the street a couple years ago, I think, at Memorial Opera House doing a benefit. He's doing a benefit for us with his one-man show, A Man and His Prostate. So August the 25th, there's a meet and greet. You can meet him, and I got to toss out something that's kind of, you'll like this, because we were talking about these writers and when people want all these specialty things. They want Evian water in their dressing room, or they want, you know, only a certain kind of candy, green M&Ms. Well,
you didn't get caught by that, no, did you?
Yeah, that's no.
We'll explain. That happened before I actually worked full time there. They on the tech writer had said that, and I said, "You just got scammed by the biggest scam in show business." I said, "What you do is you just leave a note, pick out the M&Ms." But the theory behind it is that if that is done correctly, everything else will be done correctly. But I always said, just put a note in there saying you can pick out your own green M&Ms.
Because that's become the legendary one. That's almost mythical that these rock stars will say they want this bowl of only green M&Ms. Well, with Ed, listen to this. This is the kind of everyday guy he has. He just said, before the show, he would like a turkey sandwich and a root beer. That's all it says. Nothing else. That's it. He's okay with anything else.
Just make sure it's a great turkey sandwich.
That's right. We said we better get something really good.
Well, if it comes from Joe Trauma, it'll be great.
That's right. Exactly.
I saw that pajama game. The one thing I always think about pajama game is with Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon, because that was really kind of his breakout, you know, in terms of being choreographer and that transition from choreographer to director. And
I did not know that. That's interesting. I had to take that back with me.
Yeah, there you go. So, well, you know, we've talked to Philip about the Theater at the Center, and that's great, but you know, we'd like to talk to about some of the other things he's done. You know, he has got a whole book out there, it's called
three books.
That's the
but
first
it's like
the,
recipes yeah. and everything, and he's actually done demos on the stage at Theater at the Center, from The Farm, Family Recipes, and Memory of
another
Lifestyle.
Another one coming up here,
oh my gosh,
August, an October Halloween themed one coming up. So
it's been so interesting because your writing makes me feel like I'm part of your family.
Oh, that's,
you know?
so nice to say.
I just look forward to as I was looking through the articles.
Oh, that's so nice. You know, and again, when I started that, and of course I mentioned I do these different entertainment columns, which are great, but really the bread and butter, no pun intended, I think is kind of that built on the cornerstone of this From the Farm column that launched back in May of 2002. And that was just simply, I was kind of charged with writing for the food section, and I knew just enough about maybe cooking to be dangerous only being around my grandmother's kitchen, my mom's kitchen, and they made me write this feature every week. It was a standing feature called The Cook of the Week, and readers loved it. And you know, on the side between us, we used to tease it called the Crook of the Week. But the whole concept of the editor said was, oh, you know what? We'll get people to write in and suggest their family member, their neighbor, to be highlighted, and it'll write itself. They'll just mail in two recipes and a snapshot of themselves. It won't take anything, you know, to put together. Famous last words, right? Because
right.
Instead, every week we'd say, do we have anybody? And we would get people, would mail them in, because, of course, this was not the time of email. This is the 90s, so you'd have to actually snail mail things in or have somebody call in a suggestion. But when we would call the person, the candidate that had been recommended, they would always say the same thing. Oh, no, no, no. Who suggested me? No, 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 honey. I don't cook that much. I make the same two recipes for the church picnic. No, no, I don't want to be in the paper. And I would cajole them and beg them and plead and say, I've got to write this by Monday. Would you please? And they would finally relent and say, well, all right, okay. And I'd say, I need a photo of you. Oh, no, 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 no photos. I don't want to be in the paper. I don't know. So finally I asked the editor, I said, because towards the end, I started just asking my own neighbors and my own family members who had different names because they had married, if I could feature them. And I said, can I just do my own column? And they said, well, I don't know. This other feature is pretty popular. So we called it From the Farm, and I just highlighted my own family members, my own stories and recollections. And, you know, nobody ever asked about what happened to the Cook of the Week. And who would think that nearly 20 years later, I'd still be writing it every week faithfully after thousands of these recipe columns and three cookbooks later.
You're listening to Phil Potempa, WVLP.org. You can listen to us streaming. And again, if you want to support us, WVLP.org/support. And you can make a support in whatever way and underwriting however you want. So you're going to ask Esker.
I was, but I'm also going to comment that now I don't feel so bad that our email sits dormant with nobody.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, we still mine a lot of our information.
It takes a while. It takes a while to kind of get them going.
Well, Melissa and Greg, who's done the show previously, but, you know, when we took it over in October, you know, I said, you know, we were getting nothing in the email box. So we mine the information, but mm-hmm. we're now, well, I was at the chamber luncheon on Tuesday, and I'm really out there trying to promote a lot of social media. If you see, I'm on LinkedIn and everything with the show.
That's how it happens.
Yeah, so.
And you're lucky you've got that back again before any social media or any email. It was, again, tap on the shoulder, word of mouth, or get
right.
a booth up at the popcorn festival and let them know, hey, we're here on the map and we're around. But you mentioned that you feel like a lot of times you feel like, oh, I know these folks, or I'm listening in, and that's what the folksiness of these columns are. And that's always the biggest compliment. And I think it's so important, because in today's crazy world of headlines and, again, voicemails and emails and tweets and everything that happens out there, Instagrams, you can read a column that takes you back, and I don't know if this crowd in this room is old enough to remember this, but a column that talks about party lines. And I think that's so crazy in today's world of HIPAA laws and privacy. Do you remember when you could sometimes pick up a phone
right.
and hear people talking and listen to everything they were saying, because it was a shared line down that road or street, unless you had enough money to pay for a private line, right?
I know. And my mom worked for the phone company, and we were one of the first people to get a private line, because they always wanted to have the phone employees have, like, we were one of the first to get touchstone phones.
Oh, yeah.
Because they wanted the neighbors to say, oh, look, they have the cool
That makes sense.
But, yeah, I remember picking up and saying, you know, Fred down the street. And that was always a big thing, listening on the party line, what's going on.
So what is, do you have a most treasured memory? Because I know reading what I did about it and feeling part of it, it brings up your own treasured memories as you read those. But do you have a particular one that...
You know, I was going to say, like, I'm always making whatever the latest memory is that I'm spending it with my parents. My parents my mom's about to turn 88. My dad will be 90 this year in just a couple months. And so, and they're still out in the garden, mowing the grass, mm-hmm. you know, cutting wood, doing all those same things. So really kind of every memory, you know, is so treasured. But probably... I think, you know, mom and dad did not want me to be a journalist and I've said this story many, many times. For years, they told everybody when I was going to Valparaiso University, oh, he's going to be a lawyer. He's going to be a lawyer. And by the time I got to be the second semester of my junior year, I kept saying, Mom, Dad, don't tell people I'm going to be a journalist. And they said, well, there's no money in that. You know, you should be a lawyer. They've got this great law school. And now, again, I'm the youngest of five children. They're two older daughters, two older sons, and I was kind of that Catholic surprise they weren't planning on when my mom was 40 at the end. So I think really they've enjoyed my career far more than any of the others, because they're right along with me, and, you know, they've gotten to go backstage and spend time with Dolly Parton swapping recipes and meet Bob Hope and Milton Berle and, you know, all these famous people that have been so kind to them. So that's kind of my treasured memory, that I've taken them along for the ride, and I can include them in all these columns and stories. And many of these recipes are my mom's as well, so they get a kick out of somebody coming up and saying, you know, I made that recipe for your pot roast, and it was so good with the braised carrots. So I think that's probably what makes me beam the proudest.
Now, you have your third book. Do you have your third book out, or it's coming out?
Third book is already out.
Okay.
And fingers crossed, the fourth one hopefully will be right around the corner in time for the launch of this big cooking show. So that's what we're hoping for, knocking on the wood that's here.
Okay, and you can get these probably from Amazon? Or
you can get them on Amazon. You can get them at BarnesandNoble.com. They're sold, of course, at the gift shop, the South Shore Gift Shops, right there at the Performing Arts Center. You can get them, again, down the street here at your Barnes & Nobles in town. You can get them at the Welcome Center on Kennedy Avenue right there for the Convention and Tours Center for their gift shop. So they're easy to get. They're just a click away.
So what is one of your favorite recipes? I've become the chef in my house because my wife just stopped cooking. And So what's one of your favorite recipes?
All right. I would say one of the best one is kind of the one that started it all. That's in this first book. And this is the one from my grandma Potempa's Everyday Chore Bread, because my dad, the farm that you see on the cover of the book is where I live now. My parents' house is a couple fields away that they built when they got married in 1953. But Grandma Potempa raised 9 children, my dad being the youngest of the 9 on that farm, a big Polish family. And every day she started by baking 3 big loaves of bread because, you know, this is a time back in the Depression. They moved to the farm around 1929. And that's a lot of times you could make a meal. And even today, you know, I know everything's anti-carbs, but a slice of homemade thick bread with butter or peanut butter even, you know, in later years, you can make a meal off that. So that's the one I think that's near and dearest to my heart, although my mom makes an awful good fudge brownie recipe that's in there too. And there's a lot of celebrity recipes. Phyllis Diller wrote the first book with me, so her favorite recipes are in there. In the second book, Jim Nabors, one of our Indiana claim to fames, only because of the fact that he would come to the Indianapolis 500 every year and sing back home in Indiana, he wrote the second book with me with his chapter with his favorite recipes. And Florence Henderson, on Indiana Hoosier claim to fame, who is from here, she has a great brownie recipe in that one that rivals my mom's. And then in the third book, our own Betsy Palmer, who is our game show great from What's My Line and was from East Chicago, Indiana, she wrote the third book, Further from the Farm, back in 2010 with me, and she's got some wonderful recipes in there as well from her Hungarian roots.
Wow, that's fantastic. We had Betsy Palmer out at the school. It was a fundraiser. Now I can't remember.
Oh, Love Letters.
Yeah, Love Letters.
And she did it for the Hospice of the Calumet. Right. I was there. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I remember that. And she was just a joy to chat with on the phone and everything. And my dad used to work at Carlin House Furniture, which is now where WJOB is.
Oh, okay.
And actually sold her and her family some furniture. I mean, I thought my dad was, when we would go out, I thought my dad was a celebrity because we'd go out maybe to eat on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And he's a furniture salesman, but he knew all these people. Oh, hi, how are you? And of course, that was the day when you sold a piece of furniture that you kept.
Yes.
You
know,
it wasn't
yes.
like the consumable stuff that you
right.
have for a few years. But he was working about his fourth, almost fifth generation of people that, they would come back before he retired. So.
Yeah, I remember mom and dad growing up. Remember when they called them sectional sofas and
right.
had a big kind of turn? And if mom wanted to kind of mix it up a little bit, move the furniture. Because remember, people used to do that. Let's move the furniture and give it a fresh look for spring. They could take the sectional apart and there could be the corner part would be a love seat then. And
right.
they put the others on the straight wall. And yeah, nowadays people don't move furniture. Your furniture is the way it is. But yeah, that was a big thing in the spring. Let's move the furniture around and give the room a different look.
What color was your sofa?
It was a chocolate brown. Mm. And it was that kind of that itchy kind of tweedy with the little
sparkle in
little
it.
Splits in there. That
yes.
when you slept on it, your face would probably have an imprint that was not that comfortable. But at the time, who knew? It was better than the floor, right?
That's for sure. Now, in your book, and I just read just a little bit of it. I mean, Esther's the big reader and everything like that. Is there something from there you want to share for us, like a narrative or anything like that?
Yeah. A reading. It's so wonderful when an author reads.
A reading from the book.
Yeah.
A reading from the book. I should have given you a heads up on that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The easiest thing to do, just to read a little passage here, is just I kind of like the way the intro to this book kind of starts here. So it just kind of gives a little background. So in case anybody, and I'm sure most people are familiar with some of these columns and things here, but it's just the introduction to this original book. And I should say the From the Farm column, it launched in May of 2002, and I always say it was just the right time, besides the fact that we finally put to rest the Cook of the Week feature. But remember, it was just a few months after what happened with September 11th in 2001. And I always say people were looking for a time that would be a glimpse to a kinder, gentler, you know, time when you could sit underneath the swing and kind of enjoy memory. So here we go. Listen to this. When I began to write and compile this book, I knew immediately I wanted to create something both useful and informative. warm and vivid stories, photos, and memories paired with recipes. It all seemed to be the natural ingredients for something that's so good and inviting that people would want to talk about and share with others. The result is From the Farm, Family Recipes and Memories of a Lifetime. The lives chronicled in this book are my family, friends, and the great people with whom I cross paths with every day. It's like visiting with readers over a fence. The recipes have been tried and tested time and time again, and the ultimate compliment comes when a dinner guest asks for seconds, or better yet, even the recipe. But the true glue that brings all these lives and book pages together is our family farm. Now, by today's standards, it's a small farm, but its influence on me has been big. I'm proud to say I've been raised with farm values, and these are the same values that teach the importance of being generous, polite, enjoying a sense of humor, and always willing to share an extra bushel of pears, walnuts, or apples. I love our farm. It's where most of my favorite memories were born and continue to grow. And most people who open this book realize that it's based on the weekly column that appears in the Times newspaper, which now I can say also in the Post Tribune on Sundays, which also then appears in the food section cover every Wednesday in both Indiana and Illinois editions. And as I encounter the day-to-day stress of a journalist's job at a daily newspaper, turning into that long gravel lane at the farm at the end of a workday is always an inviting sight.
That's beautiful.
Oh, I know.
He takes you on a nice narrative, like little journey there. Now, you split your time between living in Chicago and the farm still?
Mm-hmm. I have a small brick bungalow that my dad's oldest brother, Uncle Joe, and his wife, Aunt Rose, left me in 2000. So that's nice for when I'm covering things in the city, such as I was at the press opening for Dear Evan Hansen on Wednesday night for the Broadway in Chicago series. And then now tonight I got to trek back down for the opening press night of Friends the Musical. It's supposed to be a musical parody of the TV show Friends, and that's at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. So having that home there is definitely a respite for me for travels. But then the farm, again, as I told you, it's just about 35 minutes from here in Valparaiso. And so the rest of the time is spent there. So for the weekend and for Sunday dinners and helping out with garden and yard work, that's where I'm going to usually you're going to find me.
Tell us something about Philip that we don't know.
I would say that a couple things that maybe people don't know, and some people might still know this, but because it's the 10th anniversary, that I appeared in the movie Public Enemies that was filmed in Crown Point opposite of Johnny Depp. So Johnny, I wasn't just an extra, I was a featured role, so I had to they had to pay for my membership with the Screen Actors Guild, SAG, and every 3 months I still get a residual check from Universal Studios, but I only had a couple lines. But those couple of lines earned me my own dressing room with my name on it and a bathroom and access to hot food at the craft kitchen. So that's, I think, one interesting. And then the other thing is I spent 10 years in prison, which I think always raises people's eyebrows. But that was in the capacity as a faculty member teaching for Purdue at their program. I taught public speaking and communications to the inmates at Westville Correctional Center and also at Michigan City State Prison for 10 years.
Do you wear the Winchell hat other than acting? Or
wow, she has done her homework.
Yes, she has.
She realizes that, and I still say to this day, that's how I got cast by Michael Mann, the director, because everybody who went to that Chicago casting agency, I think we all looked the same. So why they would have picked me to play one of the featured, there was 3 featured reporter roles that got their name in the credits with lines, and I looked like everybody else in an overcoat, but I had in my collection Walter Winchell's fedora, the famous newspaper gossip columnist who in the 1930s would have written and chronicled Dillinger's escapades and bank robberies around the country to his readers. So I did mention that on the recording videotape that they sent out to Los Angeles, and I almost didn't. And then the casting director said, wait, tell us about the hat you're wearing. And so I mentioned that, and I still say that's the claim of fame, because Colleen Atwood, the Academy Award-winning costume designer, not for that film, but for other films like Edward Scissorhands and the other films that she did with Johnny Depp, she had that as a part of my costume. She said, oh, no, we're going to keep that. And also I had little WW cufflinks of Walter Winchell, which you can't see because of the overcoat. But she said, we want to keep those as a part of your costume.
Yeah.
But really, I don't wear it just out like, hey, look at this. You know, can I buy you a drink? Look, do you know who wore this hat once? No, I don't do that.
At home, just like at home, writing.
Exactly. Would that be kind of a fun thing to say, oh, I put on this hat and it kind of gets the think tank going? But no, usually it's preserved in a box and bubble wrap.
We got less than a minute, but I want you to recap what we have at Theater at the Center.
Okay, Theater at the Center, please come out and see us if you've never joined us. Right now it's Million Dollar Quartet, the big Broadway premiere for Northwest Indiana. That goes right now, and it continues until March the 31st. Theater at the Center, 1040 Ridge Road at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts, and the box office is 219-836-3255 or theateratthecenter.com.
We'd like to thank Phil Potempa for being here for our guest for Art on the Air.
Thank you so much.
Great it's interview.
So interesting.
And remember, you can send us your information at artontheair@gmail.com. You've been listening to our show today. We're rebroadcast Mondays at 5 p.m. and also streaming. Our guests next week will be Robin Beeson-Camilaro and share books about the wonderful homes in the National Lakeshore. We'll see you next week right here on Art on the Air.
Aloha.